Today we'll look at a way to keep track of reading on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. What exactly is a book journal? We'll ask Susan Soares, who has been keeping one for years. Then we'll ask Garrison Keillor for the Writer's Almanac on Scribble. Okay, I give up. What is a book journal?
Well, I think it can be a lot of things to a lot of people. I've done one for 20 years now, and a lot of it had to do with my being a high school English teacher. Mm-hmm. And so I started out journaling and keeping passages of things from books because I wanted to make sure and model for my students. If it's important, they should do it. They should see me doing it.
Did you have students doing it?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Oh, absolutely. We did a lot of individualized reading in my classes, and so it was also a way for me to keep track of all the books I was reading, and then if they read one of the books that I suggested, we could talk about it. I could go back and look at my notes and help them if they were having trouble with an area.
I would think it would be fun to have them keep a journal kind of as they're reading the assignment, but then 3 weeks later after they've covered it in class and see what the difference might be.
And that's what they did. I really encouraged them as they were reading, kind of at the end of each period.
You're the first English teacher that has ever even suggested a thing like a book journal. When I talked to you at the Figge, I said, whoa, just a minute. Why didn't I do this for years?
Well, it's a wonderful way for them to think about what they're reading. And then it's
they're free to respond in the way they want.
Yes.
I don't like this. I don't understand this.
Absolutely.
And then later, oh, now I see, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I usually give them about 20 sentence starters if they seem to be struggling.
Right.
And I always encourage them to write down at least one or two passages that they've loved or had questions about, and then they talk about those passages. Sometimes we call that a split journal. But and then I respond to everything that they have written, so it becomes a dialogue on paper between the two of us. And then also it becomes a dialogue just, you know, I'll pass them down the aisle and I'll say, hey, what'd you think of? And mm-hmm. we'll talk as well.
See, tweet your deficiencies as a teacher.
I know.
Just
I know.
Every year.
Yeah, I mean, that would have been such a great thing to do.
No, not
really. And such a simple thing to do. And why didn't, you know, I since Don and I began Scribble a year and a half ago, I've had to do this for the books that people suggest because I think I have to read them too. And it really does make a difference if you, as you're reading, take down favorite passages. So I'm one of your devotees, I guess, Sue.
Well, you know, the thing that when you told me about this, that Susan was keeping a book journal, I thought, well, now that's an extraordinary idea. And yet, at the same time, I thought, I can't remember what was in the books I've been reading over the years. I can't remember the plots. I sometimes remember a character, but it's all gone. And if I had kept some kind of notes, at least I could keep alive some aspect of what I had read in the past over these 80 years, for Pete's sake. What do you put in the journal? I mean, is there a particular formula?
No, there's no formula. And there was never a formula for my students either, but I tend to do four or five things. One, I write down passages that are just beautiful writing, just knocked out, you know, eloquent writing. I also end up writing passages that capture the essence of a character or that show motivation of a character. Sometimes I just write down a main point because it's so concisely put. Sometimes there'll be something that particularly strikes me because it's a contemporary issue and what's being said speaks to that. Sometimes I write down things that just make me laugh. And I always put a smile face next to it. So if I want to go back and make myself laugh, I go back and I find those places. And I also would copy down passages that I would use to start my kids writing journals just, you know, off the cuff. So mm-hmm. for all those reasons, for all those.
Do you ever do negative comments?
Yes, I do. I always bracket those, but I sometimes will put something about, I don't understand why the author did this. It's very contrived. I don't like what he did with this character. This doesn't make sense. Yes, so I will.
Then have you ever changed your mind by the end of the book?
Well, what I've been doing, I read the book straight through, but I put sticky notes next to every passage that I want to come back and look at. So when I'm all done reading the book, then I sit down. It usually takes me about an hour, maybe an hour and a half, and I go back at all my sticky notes.
So you do the writing after you've read the book.
Yes.
I was thinking that one of the disadvantages, like being going on a date and giving it a grade as you go, this is a B-minus date, you know. It doesn't have much chance after that, does it?
But I had my students. They did write as they went. But I just found it easier to come back to the passages after I'm done.
Susan, do you go back and read maybe 10, 15 years ago? Do you go back to your journals?
I've got 20 years worth. And so I told Tweet I had 41 journals now. And I use them. I'm in two book groups. So it's really helpful to have all of this written down, because sometimes a book will pop up that I've read 10 years ago, but we're reading it now in a book group. So I can pull out my notes and I can take a look at them and have a refresher on that.
Can you open a journal and read us something that you've written down?
Is it okay if it's a passage that I copied?
Yes, yes, anything at all. I'm just fascinated with the idea. First of all, you obviously are devoted to books.
Right.
And you take the time to express your devotion in a concrete way, which I find admirable and astounding.
Well, I think they've done some studies here recently that prove that we remember 40% more of what we write by hand than what we type. And for me especially, the hand, arm, up into the brain is what makes something stay with me. So it's really my way of remembering.
Read us a passage.
Okay, this is from Marilynne Robinson's Lila.
Ooh, okay.
Okay. And Lila did enjoy the sight of the Reverend. He looked as if he'd had his share of loneliness. And that was all right. It was one thing she understood about him. She liked his voice. She liked the way he stood next to her, as if there was a pleasure for him in it. Lila was old, for a woman being old just means not being young and all the work been worked out of her before it had really even set in. So Lila had been old a long time, but not in a way that helped.
What did you like about that passage?
Oh, it captured who Lila was and what she was struggling with and why she ended up having a connection with the Reverend as mm-hmm. the book moves along.
Mm-hmm. Do you write your approval or non-approval of these books as you go along?
I do. I don't give everything like a 4 stars, 3 stars, but sometimes at the front of each journal, I list all the titles in that journal along with the year, and sometimes I'll put a star by one particular book because I know I want to come back to it and reread it, like Major Pettigrew's Last Stand. I know I want to read that one again.
Read some of the titles from that journal.
Gutenberg's Apprentice, which, by the way, sometimes I own a book and I mark it with pencil all the places that are wonderful, but then I still go ahead and copy some of those down just because it's a way for me to remember. Mm-hmm. Broken Harbor, Lila, The Bat, Death in a Strange Land, Sea of Troubles, A Noble Radiance, Island of a Thousand Mirrors, Lisette's List, and now you asked if I do put some things in here. These next two, I put arrows down, which means I didn't like them. So I guess I do.
And which were those?
Stone Butterfly and The Walk. And I can't even, I'd have to look at my notes to know what those were about. Mm-hmm. My Name is Mary Sutter. That was a favorite. I also put notes in my journal whenever I go to hear an author speak. And so Robin Olivera was the one who did My Name is Mary Sutter, and she spoke in Bettendorf. So I also put in notes from listening to authors whenever I can.
You know, would you have done this had you not been teaching?
You know, I think I still would have because of being in the book group, because I wanted record that way. And I'm kind of a list person anyway, and I'm a writer. Mm-hmm. And so I think I would have anyway, but certainly teaching gave it an extra impetus. But now I haven't taught for 10 years, and I've still kept all the journals.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I figured you were no longer teaching, but you're still journaling.
And absolutely.
Is it just a habit?
It's a way of making the book my own.
Mm-hmm.
Is really why. And it's also a way to enjoy it a second time. You know, I've read it once through. You were asking, I have second and third and fourth thoughts once I've read it, and I go right back and start looking at some of the passages I've marked. I go, oh, and then I tie it in with something else. I also tease people and tell them, what I do now is I work with elderly people, and so I'm very conscious of Alzheimer's and dementia. And so I also use this as kind of an insurance policy against dementia and Alzheimer's. If I have that, at least I can come back and look at all the things I've read, and maybe that will spark something.
If you're writing still, that's going to ward off dementia and Alzheimer's.
Okay, good.
They've done a study. They followed some Catholic nuns into old age. And then the nuns donated their brains afterwards. And they found out they all had Alzheimer's, but they had no evidence of it in their actions or behavior. Because they kept active, they kept reading, they kept doing things, and it's that continued activity that can override what's going on in the brain organically.
Okay.
Simply astounding. It went against all expectations.
How do you pick a book in the first place?
I used to love to go to the Rock Island Public Library 3031 branch,
right,
and I would just walk up to the new books shelving, and I would love to pull books off the shelf. Particularly, I looked for books that took me out of where I am. So I loved books that were about India, Africa, another time period. I also would often look for books that had the Booker Award or the Orange Prize on the front. But sadly, especially in the last 5 years, the number of new books physically on the shelves has been shrinking, shrinking, shrinking. So there definitely are not as many. They're not being bought.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So that is unfortunate. And a lot of recommendations. My sister is a lifelong reader, and my best friend, since I was 4 years old, is a lifelong reader. So constantly I'm getting suggestions from them.
What do you think starts a person reading? There's so many people who go through school, they learn to read, but they don't. What is it what flips that switch that turns you into a reader?
Some of it's magic.
okay.
But I think I'm going to speak from my own experience, accessibility. I remember the joy from the time I was, I don't know, second or third grade, of Dad always taking me to the bookmobile when they used to have bookmobiles. And that was one of the best times, is to walk up and down those shelves and grab books and bring them home. And let's face it, my mom and dad had lots of books in the house. They read, so watching them as well.
You know, that is one of the profound lessons in being a parent. You can talk to kids till you're blue in the face. They may or may not hear you. But it's what you do that tends to shape them.
Mm-hmm.
If you want your child to read and you don't, well, good luck. You may win out, but chances are you won't. It's what you do that counts.
Mm-hmm.
And that the example of someone reading, that gets kids started.
And you give them time. I was going to say, you give them time to read, too. I had juniors and seniors in high school, and I took 5 to 7 days out of the curriculum, And that was an individualized reading time. Everybody got to pick their own book. I gave them all kinds of suggestions, but they got to pick their own book. And they walked in the door, and they knew that full hour was going to be for reading. And Dr. Richard Hanzelka said, if it's worth doing, you give time to do it. And a lot of my seniors said, you know, this is the first time I've really finished a book, but you gave me time to do it, and I enjoyed it, and it was quiet, focused time.
What a quiet revolutionary you are.
Well,
you are a teacher who's thought through what she's doing.
She wasn't quiet at Augie, so I don't know what happened.
Well, and I have to give...
You made your share of noise.
I have to give Dr. Tweet credit here. One of the things that has driven my teaching is what he always did in the classroom. He would walk in, and the first thing he would ask would be, well, what'd you think, Carlson? He wanted us to think. He wanted us, you know, he wasn't lecturing at us. He wanted us to think and put together our own ideas. And so... He was my example.
Well,
for
which
that.
Meant he hadn't prepared the lessons.
Well, that's right. There were some moments like that. Yeah.
No.
I mean, every teacher has a technique for getting around that. Can you name three or four of the best books you've read in this? Out of how many books have you? Do you have any idea how many you've read in the last 20 years?
Well, you can do the math. I do. About 60 books a year, 60 to 70 books a year, so wow. The last 20 years.
My multiplication's not too good. There's 1,200.
That's okay.
Right.
It would be hard to pick my very, you know, favorite, some current ones, let's put it that way. All the Light We Cannot See.
Yeah, that's really good.
Wonderful, wonderful book. I read mostly fiction, but... Karen Armstrong's Jerusalem.
Oh, yeah. Oh, boy.
Nonfiction. I love dearly. I loved, you know, Gutenberg's Apprentice. I just learned actually so much about the printed word. That was just...
Anything Karen Armstrong writes, I read. She's a wonderful writer.
She is. And certainly, you know, Marilyn Robinson, who, you know, I've read all three of hers,
right.
Are amazing. It would be hard for me to pick one, but those are just some of the ones.
Have you ever quit reading a book? You just can't go on?
Most of the time, I'm pretty good at finding something that's worthwhile, but I have. I quit reading Ann Tyler's Breathing Lessons.
Oh, okay.
I was two-thirds of the way through it, but I just it just wasn't going anywhere for me, so I did stop.
Well, we're going places where we're going to have to stop anyway. I can't tell you how much I've enjoyed this. You have opened my eyes not only about an approach to books, but about an approach to teaching, too. I also taught English, and I wish I had known you before I did that.
Well, thank you very much.
And Susan Swords has been our guest today, and now it's Garrison Keillor. Support for Writer's Almanac on WVIK comes from the Mississippi Valley Regional Blood Center, working together with volunteer donors to provide blood products and services to hospitals throughout the region. Information at bloodcenter.org. I'm going to stick my hand in the book bag first and then let Roll take a turn. Years ago, I started reading the detective stories by Peter Robinson, featuring Inspector Banks. He's a very interesting guy who has left London and is working out somewhere in the Yorkshire area. And I must say, I found him a very interesting person. The people around him were fully realized. The stories were interesting. And I think I read all that were available at that time and then just kind of lost track of him. And then I noticed in the bookstore the other day, In the Dark Places by Peter Robinson, I realized I had missed several in the series. And so I read it, and there's some new characters in there that I didn't remember. Obviously, personnel at the department changes over time. A very interesting story. Two incidents that seem unrelated come together in an unusual way. And the book, as always, was entertaining. It was a quick read. I enjoyed it. Spent a couple of quick sessions at night, and it was over with. And I recommend the series to you, but I suggest that you start with the very first one, Gallows View.
Does the character grow and develop?
Oh, yes. Okay. The character changes over time. We learn about his family, the pressure on his job. It's not one of those things where you get really tired of the guy's problems. He's a very human person, and what happens is quite plausible. The accounts of the people around him, I'll tell you that his marriage after a while dissolves. He's along the way, he's had a couple of affairs and so on. But the main thing is the police work that's done, the thoroughness with which the plot is covered, and the intricacy of the plot. The English are very good at that, putting together these things.
There's so many people writing really good mysteries that are more than just, you know, a way to pass the summer reading on the beach. And the problem is, if you look at the New York Times bestseller list, the three or four names that come to the top are very good,
mm-hmm.
right? But they're more or less formula writers. You know what you're going to expect when you read them. And to find people like this, really go a little farther than the New York Times bestseller list.
I remember when I stumbled onto Ross McDonald years ago. I was a devotee of the Southern California Hardboiled Detective School,
right.
Started by Dashiell Hammett, carried forward by Raymond Chandler. But Ross McDonald was the peak of that genre, I guess. I found that his books went beyond the framework that we assign to such novels. And I really enjoyed that, and I actually grieved when the man died because he was turning out one a year.
Right.
And I looked forward to those every year. I remember a lot about those books. They made a real impression on me. They dealt with themes that you quite often don't encounter in detective stories, but in what we might call literature. And I appreciated the deftness with which he handled that. It's not John McDonald, but Ross
McDonald, right.
Yeah, he's really good. We got a minute here.
Well, those things are all available now on the eBay, like A-Books, and quite often, even Ross McDonald, Raymond Chandler, and all the rest, quite often the postage is more than the book.
Yeah, it's true.
The book is $1 or $2 sometimes. The postage is $3.
I hate Daedalus catalogs.
Well, they're a little more expensive than the J.L. Hudson bookseller is the...
Or Hamilton.
Hamilton. Edward Hamilton books, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, those guys have relieved me of more money than I care to think about.
But the price is right.
Yeah, that's true.
But if you went out on eBay, it would be even less than that. And I have not gone on eBay to look for a book that I have not found.
Mm-hmm.
Multiple copies of.
Yeah, and sometimes, you know, you really have to dig to find what you want. But there are sources out there, and as you say, prices get better. But the time doesn't get any better because we tend to run out of it. We enjoyed talking to Susan Swords, who kept a book journal. We advise you to do the same. But mostly, this is Don Wooten with Roll Tweet, inviting you to join us again next week when once again we scribble.